Hi, and welcome to our Pensions Age podcast. I'm Laura Blows, editor of Pensions Age. Joining me today to discuss the role of asset-backed securities within pension fund portfolios are Royal London Asset Management Head of Sterling Credit Research, Martin Foden, and its Senior Fund Manager, Shalin Shah. Hi, Martin.
Hi there, Laura.
Hello, Shalin.
Hello, Laura.
Martin, Shalin, let's begin by looking at the broad picture. How would you define ABS and what do you look for when investing in asset-backed securities? Martin, would you like to take that?
Sure. No, thanks, Laura. At one level, it's a really straightforward question, but actually I think it really gets to the heart of how we feel our approach is different to ABS, sort of framed by our evolution. So we've been lending in a secured way for over 30 years now. Our view is that any bonds where you have asset backing to support the money you've lent and to support the interest the issuer needs to pay us, we would consider as asset backed. Actually, what's happened more latterly, and certainly post the financial crisis, is the convention is that ABS is a much more defined, narrow market that just focuses on securitization. For us, it's absolutely about picking the best of both worlds in terms of secure corporate bonds, but also securitization. In terms of what we look for, at a broad level, perhaps not surprisingly, we're looking for effective security. So security that allows us to enforce if the issuer or company gets into trouble, and investing in the kind of jurisdictions that allow us to do that. As well as security, I think it's really important you have effective covenants that interact with the security and often give us sort of early triggers or early warnings before default for us to engage with the issuer and intervene to support our lending position. And it's also really important that the collateral, the assets backing us, are of a high quality as well. We think ABS is a really idiosyncratic asset class. It's really specific. Not all secured bonds are equal, and it's very, really important that we understand the particular characteristics of each ABS that we invest in.
Okay, one area which you haven't mentioned there is that of ESG. This is such an important focus now for investors, as you know. How do you implement ESG analysis for ABS? Is it even possible?
Yeah, again, it's in some ways, it's a really simple answer. The integration of ESG into ABS research and investment is no different than integration into other forms of corporate bond investing. It's absolutely critical. The origin of the risk really doesn't matter. It's all about impact. So any risk, whatever the label that can undermine our issuers' balance sheets or the sustainability of their cash flows, we have to be considering that within our investment and our analysis. In truth, in practice, that sounds great as a concept. There are some specific characteristics of corporate bonds that make it slightly more difficult in terms of implementation. Coverage from third-party data providers is generally very low because their origins tend to be in the equity market. But also, as I said, corporate bonds are a very idiosyncratic asset class. They're really nuanced, and we love that in terms of getting into the nitty-gritty. But what you find is, unlike equities, it's not just about who you lend to, but also how you lend. And even where within the company that you lend can all have an impact on how that ESG risk transmits through the balance sheet. And what we find is that sort of off-the-shelf, top-down ESG scores or ratings or labels don't tend to handle that nuance particularly well. Our solution to that is to have a really high-quality, experienced in-house responsible investment team, collaborating with the credit analysts and fund managers to enhance that risk identification. Now, if that's a challenge in corporate bonds, it's even more of a challenge within the more sort of esoteric, securitized and ABS space. But that's great. I mean, for us as active managers, if there's an information challenge, if we do that analysis well from a bottom-up perspective, as I said, with the right kind of expertise and experience, we can turn that challenge into an opportunity to add value.
Okay, in terms of talking about opportunities for pension funds at the moment, liquidity has unsurprisingly been a very important area of focus for them. So what role does ABS play with that? Are ABS bonds less liquid than unsecured corporate bonds? Shalin, what's your view on that?
Hi, Laura. It's a good question. So, of course, we saw a tumultuous October, and we've seen various periods also during COVID where liquidity all but disappeared for a short period within credit markets. the one factor that's been pretty common since the 08-09 financial crisis is that bank balance sheets just aren't there to support liquidity requirements because, you know, during post the crisis, those balance sheets were constrained. So what that has meant is that actually, even if you own a bond that you think is quite liquid in the unsecured space, you know, a lot of the high profile names, when you most need that liquidity, it's often not there, or the haircut you have to take is quite significant in terms of selling it at a much lower price to get liquidity. And we saw that recently in October. What we have, however, seen is no real difference between the liquidity of a lot of the senior, larger issue size ABS bonds and unsecured bonds. Our focus is much more on an emphasis on the stability of the cash flow and the protection afforded within the specific securities we own. However, having said that, we may go on to this later, but there are some bonds out there in the ABS space where they're very small issue sizes, which are less liquid. And that is clearly an area that would have been more detrimental for owners during October. We're not as focused on those areas for clear reasons around the risk within those types of securitizations is quite high.
Okay, another risk I wanted to discuss is whether it's true that most ABS products are highly exposed to end consumer risk. And if so, how do you handle that?
Yes, so that is absolutely the case in the securitized space. So, of course, Martin talked earlier about two different ways of lending. There are secured corporate bonds where we're lending to blue chip companies like BT or BBC, but secured on, if you're watching the 10 p.m. news, the broadcasting house, they are examples of secured corporate bonds. But since the 08-09 crisis, where the securitization market effectively got moved into bondholder hands, it was a bank-to-bank funded markets moved more towards end investors. What we have seen is a huge mushrooming of growth within those types of products. And as part of that, those products tend to be very much focused on three key areas, consumer-led areas, for example, autos, credit cards, and of course, mortgages. And I think that that is a key point that investors need to be aware of, that if you buy a typical specialist ABS fund out there, you may think you're getting diversification, but actually you're very exposed to end consumer risk, unlike a more diversified ABS approach that we undertake, which includes a large exposure to corporate bonds with additional security backing our claim.
So can you take comfort from ratings and the risks within high rate securitization? I mean, surely the risks are low in AA securitization, for instance.
Yeah, I think it's a really important point to understand within that specific securitization market, which, as Shannon said, has gone through quite a rehabilitation since the financial crisis. If we look at a typical securitization structure, what you will find is the senior piece, the first claim piece, tends to be very large because the issuers of these bonds are trying to maximize the amount of leverage and minimize their funding costs. That piece will typically be rated AAA. So the AA piece that you're talking about will be a junior part of that capital structure. It will have a secondary claim on the assets that are being secured. And we think that's really, really important to understand from a risk point of view, because especially as economic clouds are gathering and concerns around asset values are increasing, as the value of the assets you're secured on decreases, those junior pieces take those losses very, very quickly. They tend to be quite small tranches, as Shannon said. So the margin for error of going from total recovery to full loss is very, very narrow. In effect, you're losing your money in the blink of an eye. And it's only in that most senior piece, that AAA piece, which is where we choose to invest, that you have a much greater margin for error as asset values start to fall. So that subordination risk is a really important one to understand. And if you look at a typical sort of off-the-shelf dedicated ABS fund, it's not uncommon for more than 50% of the assets in those funds to be in the subordinated parts of the capital structure, because that allows the manager to maximize their notional yield but remain within an investment grade context. as well as subordination, Schelling's talked about the concentration risk. There are some other features which I think you need to understand in those AA and lower pieces. The rating agencies are openly involved in this because they are specifically rating to a very long term, often 40, 50 years in the future. Whereas when an investor buys one of those junior pieces, they feel they're in a very short dated bond. Again, often those funds have average life of cash flows of less than 3 years. The reality is, and we're seeing this, it's not theoretical, it's happening. If the issuers decide not to call those junior bonds at expected maturity, because cash flows then get diverted to the senior pieces, the actual exposure in terms of time can be much, much longer. So not only do you potentially have a concentrated exposure, a subordinated exposure, but also you can have a much longer exposure to that risk than you feel you have from the headlines of those particular bonds.
Okay, let's put all of this into context with the current climate. As we move into a lower growth and recessionary environment, how do ABS valuations look? What are the key risks that pension funds should focus on when assessing ABS strategies?
Thank you, Laura. So Martin's talked a lot about some of the key risks in terms of latent risks when you invest in securitizations. However, it's not all bad news. The way in which we invest, we find a lot of opportunities within secured bonds as well as securitizations. What we want to do is find those opportunities in such a way that we're not exposing end clients to that concentration and latent risk that we talked about earlier. And what we've found over a long period of time is that investor focus within corporate bonds has been moved towards two separate strategies. So ABS on one hand, which is just focused on those securitizations with that concentration and latent risk. On the other hand, other corporate bond funds which follow credit indices or are benchmarked against credit indices tend to fixate much more on unsecured bonds. And there's a logic to that, in that the unsecured bond component of credit indices is significant. It's around 85% of the market. So most investors in their approach will look for the easy way, which is just to focus on senior unsecured bonds. But what we have learned is that when push comes to shove, that senior unsecured claim you have on a business may turn junior. So when we invest, we have a much larger weight within our corporate bond funds in secured bonds, where we can pick up yield, not sacrifice yield, yet embed significant downside protection by being senior in the capital structure and looking at the specifics of the covenants. So a typical corporate bond we invest in may have half the assets in secured debt. When we look at the diversified asset-backed fund, we're around 80% in that type of area. But looking at the best of both worlds, really combining secured corporate funding, I mentioned BBC, BT earlier, but really focusing on their secured debt, but also combining that with securitizations, whether it's commercial mortgage-backed securities or residential mortgage-backed securities in the right parts of the capital structure. And when you combine the two, you can access really attractive yields at the present time, especially given the moves we've seen in spreads and underlying government bond yields. You can get a high 5% type yield in what is, in my opinion, a very a good entry point in that type of strategy, whilst, as we said earlier, we're going into a period of volatility, higher recession. You want to be in a strategy with that type of downside protection, but not sacrifice yield. I think one of the key things pension funds should definitely focus on is looking under the bonnet when they do assess an ABS fund, because a lot of the metrics they may see from ABS funds will show very high yields, but that is masking a significant risk from the junior bonds that Martin talked about earlier, where the yield is being looked at to a very short dated expected call, which most likely won't happen as the bonds have fallen by 10 to 15% in many cases. So it's just making sure you have your eyes open, ask the right questions to asset managers around the risks around non-calls and the way in which yields are measured, and look for strategies that are focused more on the senior capital structure to protect against the downside risks.
Okay, I'm afraid that's all we have time for. Thank you, Schelling, and thank you, Martin, and thank you all for listening. Goodbye.